Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to stay in control of your life if you cannot control chronic pain? Writer Jeanette Fulda first gained fame blogging about losing half her body weight through diet and exercise, and was just a couple of weeks from the release of her first memoir when she came down with a bad headache. That was 3 years ago, and the pain has never entirely gone away. In the course of those 3 years, Fulda has undergone dozens of tests and spent tens of thousands of dollars seeking relief and answers. The best she's been able to do is identify some of the things that seem to make the headache worse. So what has it taken for her to learn to live with chronic illness and with the constant stream of friends and strangers alike who are sure they know what might cure her? Fulda's new memoir is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. She also blogs at pastaqueen.com. Jeanette, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
The time this started for you was so ironic because you had really sort of taken control of this thing that so many people struggle with by losing the weight that you wanted to lose. And then suddenly you were knocked down by something that you, it seemed, had no power at all to do anything about.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally in the best health of my life. I'd never been in better shape. I was eating well and I was exercising regularly. And I was actually training for a half marathon. And one day I got a headache, which kind of feels like your typical tension headache. It's just kind of a pressure, a tightening, you know, in the face. And I didn't really think much of it at first, but then, you know, I went to bed and it was still there the next morning, and then it was there the next day. And it since then has actually never gone away. So that's probably the only atypical thing about it.
You'd had one persistent headache once before in your life, but that one was able to be controlled by medication.
Yeah, I first got in the headache that didn't go away when I was 21, and it happened when I was driving up to visit a friend, and I got lost, and then there was a chemical spill on the highway, so I had to take a detour, and by the time I got there, I was just really stressed out, so I had a headache, and then it just wouldn't go away. So I went and saw the doctor, and they were able to give me a medication that worked for 6 years there to keep the headache away. And I tried going off of it one or two times, and when I did, the headache came back, so I stayed on the medication, but for whatever reason, then it just stopped working.
And when you say for whatever reason, I mean, that's really in some ways the frustration of this whole experience, is that no one has ever been able to tell you exactly what the source of this is.
Yeah, and I think that also people have kind of a misconception about headaches. There are secondary headaches and primary headaches. Mm-hmm. Secondary headaches are headaches that are a symptom of something else. So if you have the flu and you have a headache, that would be a secondary headache. But a primary headache is when the headache itself is the problem. And actually 90% of headaches are primary headaches. So I do have people ask me a lot, well, what's causing the headache? What is it? Do you have a brain tumor? Do you have something like that? But the headache itself is the problem.
So when you started visiting doctors and you know, they would suggest things and you try them and they didn't work, how much time did you spend on Google trying to figure out for yourself what might work?
Oh, way too much time, and probably time when I was supposed to be working at my desk. But, you know, when your head hurts and you're trying to work, sometimes you can't. So then I'd go to Google and look up all sorts of things, all sorts of strange queries. And the thing about headaches is that there are just so many things that can cause a headache. And I think also basically everyone has had a headache, so everyone has some sort of advice about what worked for them or for their friend.
Yeah, it's really interesting that everybody seems to think that because something worked for them, it should automatically work for you. And why are you such a dummy that you haven't tried it?
Yeah, and I think particularly since I've had it for 3 years now, I've tried so many things that sometimes when someone suggests something very basic, like, you know, have you tried going off of caffeine? It does sort of annoy me because I'm like, you really think I've had a headache for 3 years and I didn't try that?
Yeah.
But I mean, you try not to get too mad, though, because people really, they want me to get better. They have really good intentions. And I think most people don't like seeing someone suffer, especially kind of suffering meaninglessly here, because, you know, sometimes, you know, pain is supposed to be a sign that something is wrong. You know, if you stub your toe, you get pain, or if you have appendicitis, you feel a pain there, and you know that you need to do something about it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, what I have, it seems to be like my pain system is not functioning properly. It's giving me pain for no reason.
So do you know at the beginning of every day what your pain is going to be like?
Not really. You kind of just play it day by day. I do know some things that will usually trigger my headache. If I stay up really late, or adjust my sleep scheduling. If I have to wake up very early for like a flight, that will definitely set off my headache. If I drink too much caffeine, that can happen. It's kind of strange with caffeine, though, because a little bit of caffeine can actually help with headaches, but if you have too much, then it starts making them worse. And I try to eat well and exercise, because that's just good for you no matter what. And I think any doctor will tell you that will just help with almost any illness, really.
So you mentioned earlier that you were in the best health of your life when this happened. You were also 27 years old. I mean, that's that time when everybody sort of looks at you and assumes you're on top of the world.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's fairly common for chronic illnesses like that to kind of happen in your 20s. So you kind of feel like kind of cheated that something like this happened so early that, you know, your body broke down so soon. Because, I mean, you kind of expect once you get into your 50s or 60s that you'll start to have, you know, small health problems you'll have to deal with. But in your 20s, it kind of sucks. But, I mean, luckily there are several communities that kind of help, like, women my age. I think there's one online. It's called the Chronic Babe website, where they have forums where it's just aimed at kind of women in their 20s or 30s who've had to deal with this kind of stuff. So that kind of support network really does help a lot, because you know that you're not alone.
Are people who haven't experienced this more likely to assume that somehow it's not as severe as you make it out to be?
I think that's the problem with invisible illnesses, is that when someone can't see it, they forget that you have it. It's kind of ironic, because when I was overweight, when I was very morbidly obese, I really hated the fact that everyone could see that and could see that I had this problem, and I quite frankly wish I could have hidden that. But then when I got this headache that never went away, I got mad that people couldn't see it, and they didn't realize that I was just always in pain, or that it was really affecting me. It was making me hard to do my work or to do all the things that I wanted to do. So it's kind of a widespread problem, too, because I think something like 70 million Americans suffer from some sort of chronic pain, be it lower back pain or headaches or anything like that. So I think now that I had the headache, I'm more aware of the fact that people might be suffering and you just might not know about it.
Mm-hmm. We had the author and the novelist Kevin Brockmeyer on a couple of weeks ago. Have you heard about The Illumination?
No, I haven't.
It's a book, and it's basically that the concept is that everyone in the world, their pain begins to glow, or if they have an illness, it is visible to others because it emits light. And it's sort of about how that phenomenon would change people. It's a great book if you want to check it out. But, you know, hearing you talk about this and then thinking about that story, they seem to go together in a way.
Yeah, and, I mean, that would be kind of nice if people could maybe see a light or a halo or something that would show that I was in pain. And actually, one of the stranger email suggestions I got was someone who said that I had a headache because I was possessed by a spirit or a saint. And if you took a photo of me, you'd be able to see some sort of like little lens flare or a spirit orb that would prove this.
But I don't know, your jacket photo doesn't seem, there seems to be no orb around you.
Yeah, and I was actually, when I was picking out an author photo, I was worried about taking a photo where I look too happy, because I'm like, well, you know, do I look like I'm actually in chronic pain? But I think when you're in chronic pain, you get really good at faking. You know, you kind of don't want people to think that you're weak. You don't want people to pity you too much. So you do get very good at pretending like you're fine, which then can also make you feel bad when people don't realize you're in pain. So it's kind of, you can't win.
Well, it's hard too, because I mean, I would imagine you just sometimes want a day off from that. Even when you're able to handle it, you just wish that you could have like for this weekend, let me feel fine.
Yeah, and it kind of got to a point where I don't really fully remember what it was like not to be in pain, because it sort of becomes part of your consciousness.
Yeah.
When I think about like what makes me, it's like kind of the chatter that goes on in my head, and when I can see and hear, and then I also have this element of pain that's kind of always with me. So it's hard to remember what it was like without that always with me.
You know, the other interesting thing about this, Jeanette, is that because it's with you all the time, in some ways you almost can't give yourself the sort of pass that, you know, if I get a headache and I snap at my husband, he understands and, you know, in a couple of hours I'll be better. At some point you have to pick up and think, well, I have to I mean, I want to have a life.
Yeah, and I've found that I can't tell when I'm being lazy anymore. Because I know before the headache, there were times when maybe I didn't want to do something, and, I just was being lazy. But now, if I don't want to do something, I think, well, am I being lazy, or is it just because I have a headache? And no one would want to, do work when they have a headache.
A lot of this book, for people who aren't sure what they're going to find, is really funny, and you have a great sense of humor about this. I mean, it seems like for most people, the first thing to go is their sense of humor. Was that ever something that you struggled with, or was that always a coping mechanism for you?
I think that's just part of my personality, and it's part of how my family is together. We always have a lot of laughs, particularly at family reunions. It gets very loud with laughter. So I think a positive attitude really is important. I think life is maybe 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of pain, too, pain is this perception. And there are kind of ways you can try to, alleviate the pain just by thinking. One of my techniques is trying to distract myself from the pain, because if you're not thinking about it, you don't quite notice it as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're kind of laughing and making jokes about it, that just helps you, deal with it so it's not quite as bad.
So is it just excruciating for you to sit here for an hour and talk all about it?
No, I mean, I'm doing okay. Today I'm actually in a low pain day. Mm-hmm. I usually use a scale of 1 to 5, where mm-hmm. 1 is the lowest and 5 is the most. And so right now I'm actually at a 1, so we're pretty good right now.
Good.
Yeah.
Talk about this, because initially on your blog, which is about a lot of different things, initially you were talking about the headache, and then after a while you were like, I have to just stop writing about it every single day.
Yeah, and I think that's also because my blog didn't start out as a headache blog. It mm-hmm. started out chronicling my weight loss.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of readers who don't deal with chronic pain. So I feel like if you don't have chronic pain, you don't quite understand what it's like. So the comments that I would get were very well-intentioned. There were people who wanted to help me, but their comments weren't helpful for me. So that's why I kind of pulled back. And I also, I didn't want my life to be only about the headache. I kind of wanted to focus on what was left of my life and kind of grow from that.
It's sort of amazing. Someone wrote to you, and you included in the book an email that said something like, I know you have a headache, but get over it. You didn't post any good recipes last week. I mean, did you just want to throw the computer out the window at that point?
Oh, yeah. That one was really, it made me so mad. And particularly because I got that around a point in my life where I was depressed, about maybe 7 or 6 months into the headache, and I was really beginning to realize this was probably never going to go away. And I was just kind of looking into my future and just thinking, my life is over.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do anything worthwhile again. I'm going to have to just kind of sleepwalk through the rest of my life. And then I got this email about someone just kind of telling me to just get over it. And I'm like, you don't get it at all, do you?
And I guess there's no point at which you know for sure, okay, this is forever. Every day you sort of, how long did it take you to get over waking up hoping that you'd be better today?
I think it took probably at least a year or so.
Uh-huh.
And the book itself is basically, it's about that journey of from being diagnosed to coming to a point where you accept that your life has changed, and where I stopped waiting to get my old life back and move forward with the new life that I'd come to have. So with me, it was about a year. And the thing with chronic pain, which is actually kind of sad, is the longer you're in the pain, the harder it is to cure, because your brain has this ability to change, which is called neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like your brain has learned how to be in pain. So it's you're very good at being in pain. And unless you kind of get rid of it right away, it just becomes more and more likely that you'll be in chronic pain for the rest of your life.
Memoirist and blogger Jeanette Fulda is my guest. Her new book is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Yo. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is memoirist and blogger Jeanette Fulda. She blogs at pastaqueen.com. Her new book is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. You mentioned, Jeanette, that you spent some time being really depressed about this. In fact, you had suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, and it wasn't to a point where I was actually planning anything or done anything like that, but it was sort of this option kind of far out in the future. I compare it to being like a woman who is planning her wedding, even though she's not dating anyone, she's not engaged,
yeah.
You just think, you know, oh, well, you know, what color should the bridesmaid's dresses be? So I was thinking, okay, you know, maybe far out here in the future, it will come to that. You know, what should I do? Should I leave a note? And when I started having those thoughts, I was like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
So I did, you know, seek help, and I went to see my doctor, and thankfully antidepressants did help with that, you know, treatment, which is nice because none of the other pills were working for me. So at least that helped.
How much empathy did you get from your doctors?
I was pretty lucky that I didn't have any big horror stories from my doctors, because I know sometimes I've heard of other chronic pain patients having doctors who don't take their complaints seriously or don't quite get it. But mine were pretty good. I think the only complaints I had were sometimes I was neglected by my doctors. I know I had one who had recommended Botox treatment, which is a treatment that was recently actually FDA approved for headaches.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to get approval from insurance. So they said they'd call me back when that was done, and then they never, ever called me back. So that kind of made me feel like I wasn't that important, or maybe I was just one of many people kind of lost in the medical system.
Well, it's got to be hard for doctors, too, because they're, you know, they go through school with the idea that they'll be able to fix a lot of things as long as they have the information they need. And in this case, they weren't able to fix you.
Yeah, and I think my perception of doctors changed because of the experience. You know, before this, I kind of expected to go to a doctor and just be fixed. Modern medicine has come so far, you know, you can have heart transplants, you can do all these amazing things, so you just think, well, if I have a headache, surely they can fix that. But, you know, as I kind of went through this process, I came to see that doctors are really just people, too, and they have very good intentions, but they're more like your partners sort of in your medical treatment, so you need to kind of work with them, and if, you know, you're not really getting progress, it's okay to move on and search for someone else maybe who would give you some more options.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones to Leanne in Arlington. Hi, Leanne.
Hi. I was calling because I also live with chronic pain, and I was hoping maybe your guest could talk a little bit about one of the difficulties that my partner and I have is she finds it really difficult to be sick, that she feels like, you know, I'm always sick and she'll never be as sick as I am, and that's really hard for us. And I was hoping that maybe your guest had some sage advice.
Thanks for your call. Jeanette?
Well, I'm single, so I don't have a life partner who's supporting me, which I think would have helped a lot during the process. I think particularly when you're going to so many doctors, it kind of helps to have someone taking care of things. I mean, I would hope that, you know, your partner would be able to just be okay with that. And I think just, you know, your partners, if it were the other way around, if you know, you were well and he or she was sick, you know, would be the one taking care of her, so for him. And, you know, I think one of the things I kind of gave my permission to do was kind of do less than humanly possible. I don't have to do, you know, I don't have to be superhuman.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, you know, your partner would also kind of realize that you do as good as you can, but it's okay to take a break. It's okay to be on the other side of the equation sometimes.
There's an interesting scene that you recount in the book when you go to the release party for your book that came out in 2008, and your mom attends, and she says, "Oh, you must be feeling so much better." And you were like, "No, no, I'm not. I just faked it the whole time, and I feel awful." And I imagine that it must be. Is there another layer of having to think about how this affects the people who worry about you and who care about you?
Yeah, and I think also in work. Work was one of the big places that affected me because I didn't want to be like the weakest link in the chain. I didn't want to be the person who couldn't keep up because if I wasn't doing the work, someone else had to do it. So, you know, you don't want to be a burden on other people. I think I was kind of fortunate. My family was very happy to help. I talk about how my mom would come and do my dishes. Mm-hmm. My brother kind of left a rotisserie chicken at my house for dinner one night unexpectedly. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully you have the support of your family and friends, but they also, you know, sometimes they forget you're in pain or they can't really do anything and they feel bad about it. But I would say maybe they can focus on the things they can do, that those little things that help you out.
And you write that, you know, being sick is work and it takes twice as long to do that work when you're ill.
Yeah. I think it is a pain to have to schedule doctor's appointments and to go into the test, regardless of whether you feel well or not. So it becomes this big irony that you have to do all this while you're in, like, the least capable position of doing it, which is why it would be nice to have a partner or having someone who could, you know, keep track of all your medical records or come with you to appointments and make sure you ask all the questions that you want to ask.
Do you feel like this gets in the way of forming a long-term relationship?
Sometimes I do, because particularly when the headache was at its worst, because you do feel sort of broken. You don't feel like a complete person, and you kind of wonder, well, why would anyone want to date someone who has a chronic headache? You know, that doesn't really sound like fun, you know, because you do sometimes have to break appointments, or if you have a really bad pain day, you just can't do everything that you want to do. So you kind of feel like maybe that would make you less appealing to date.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Barbara in Grapevine. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. What a wonderful program. A couple of things. I really relate to her. I have friends that don't understand that what I have is not going to be fixed. I have permanent nerve damage, partly related to injuries and partly related to diabetes, and it's not going to get better. Oh, and I just have to live with that. My other thing is I'm going through various treatments right now, but my big fear is becoming addicted to Vicodin. And, you know, I have to take quite a bit of it. I just can't function.
Jeanette, do you want to comment on that and sort of what you might relate to from what Barbara had to say?
I think with the Vicodin, I think people do have real concerns about becoming addicted to it or, you know, using it. I would hope maybe you can work with your doctor and voice that concern and make sure that you're not getting into that position. But I think people also become hesitant to use as much as they need because they are afraid of that. So I think you have to find some sort of balancing point where you are taking care of yourself and taking what you need, but also being aware that, you know, you don't want to abuse it too much. As for what she was saying before, I think that's a really good point, is people don't quite get that you're not going to get better. I think particularly with a headache, they just think a headache is going to go away. But when people tell me something like, "Oh, I hope your headache goes away," it does actually irritate me a little bit, even though it is such a good thought to have, just because it reminds me of the fact that my headache probably isn't going to go away. Mm-hmm. And I sort of compare it to telling an amputee that you hope their leg grows back. I mean, that would be wonderful, but
it's not a nice thing to say. Yeah,
yeah, it's probably not going to happen. So I think it's better to tell me, you know, I hope you have a low pain day, or I hope you have as good of health as possible today, because that's something that can happen.
So the title of your book is Chocolate and Vicodin. Another thing that you struggled with was the concern that you would regain the weight you had lost, because the one thing that occasionally made you feel a little bit better was eating foods you loved.
Yeah, and the headache really did make me believe that I am a food addict. You know, before this, I wasn't really sure if food addiction was a real thing or not, but I really found that I was using food as a drug. It was the only drug that was working. I would after a long day at work, I'd actually stop off at the grocery store and I'd get like chocolate covered pretzels or something like that, and I'd devour it. And for those like 5 to 10 minutes when I was eating, I did actually feel better. But in the long term, it was making me gain weight, which didn't make me feel as good about myself, and it's also not good for my health. So I mean, I have regained some weight from when I was at my lowest, but I'm also still over 100 pounds less than I was at my highest. So I feel like I've kind of reached this middle ground where my pain is low, but I'm not eating so much that I'm gaining weight. I've kind of hit a maintenance level.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Deborah in Fort Worth. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I was just, in listening to you more, I guess I understand now that you have been to several different types of allopathic doctors, neurologists, et cetera, had tests done, and they really can't find a cause or a reason. Have you tried any of the non-traditional medicines, acupressure, acupuncture, massage, craniosacral, any of those for relief?
Yeah, I have. I probably spent like the first 5 or 6 months doing just traditional medicine. Then I went in for acupuncture, and I kind of had mixed results with that. After some sessions, I really did feel better, but it didn't really last more than a couple hours. And sometimes I'd have a session, and I just didn't really feel anything. I've also done some massage. I've done like just regular kind of like body massage, and then I have tried the craniosacral massage, which is sort of this massage that it's kind of aimed at parts of your head and your neck, and it's supposed to kind of help clear out fluids or stuff like that in your body. So I have explored that. I would say I do still feel biased towards traditional medicine, but that's just, you know, my personal bias. I think plenty of people have found really great results with some of the non-traditional medicines. So I think it's definitely something to explore. And I think one of the big important things when you have a chronic illness like this is to keep trying new things and to keep seeking help, because it can get really discouraging when you go to all these doctors and nothing helps. But I think if you keep working on the problem, it does ultimately help. Maybe you'll find something that helps lower your pain.
Another thing that you've learned a lot about is something that most people find really stressful, which is navigating the insurance system and how you pay doctors, which was something you hadn't known so much about before this all happened.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten so much experience with insurance. And particularly now, about 2 years ago, I quit my full-time job to freelance full-time. And a big factor in that decision was the headache, because I wanted to be able to set my own schedule. So if I had a really bad day, I could just sit on the couch. Or if I got a headache in the middle of the day, I could like, take 2 hours off and then come back, which I couldn't do at my full-time job. But because of that, I have to get my own insurance. I have to handle it myself. So I learned about COBRA, and that's like an extension of the insurance you had at your full-time employer, but that only lasts for 18 months. So I was on that for a while. But then luckily, I live in North Carolina now, and they have a high-risk pool run by the state for people like me who are kind of sick and insurance companies won't take them. And basically, there's some requirements, but basically you had to be denied insurance and had to have no other insurance options. And then I applied for that and I qualified for that. So that was actually pretty fortunate, and it was a big relief to me too, because when you have a chronic illness, you don't want to be uninsured. And you don't want to be uninsured for so long that then it qualifies as a pre-existing condition.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. My guest is Jeanette Fulda. Her new book is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. Let's go next to Flower Mound, and we'll speak with Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I have a son who is 18 now, but last year when he was 17, he had, through his years as a young person, experienced migraines off and on. But in his junior year in high school, he completely got a headache that wouldn't go away, severe migraine with nausea and sensitivity to light and those kinds of things. And we had tried everything. I'm sure Jeanette's probably experienced lots of those things. And we'd been through biofeedback, which was helpful in controlling it, but did not, you know, take away the pain at all. And he couldn't even go to school. He couldn't go out of the house. He wouldn't look at a TV or a computer screen. So he kind of was a young person, basically, without development or a life at that time. And I guess my big message, it was a little harder for his dad to understand it because he hadn't had chronic pain before, which I had had. But I had begun to think, well, he's just going to have to learn to live with it. I was going to take him to a pain psychiatrist. But then the doctor that he was seeing, the neurologist, said, let's try, you know, Botox. Unfortunately, we have a combination, and after about 11 days of that, he came down and said, there's something missing in my brain. The headache is gone. Hmm. It's just gone. And he hasn't had one since then. So it's just been amazing. And he got up the next day and went to school. And because I had really thought, you know, maybe there's a combination of a psychiatric problem and pain. But I guess my big message is, you know, keep trying. It's worth keeping trying. And I have, you know, said to other people who have these kind of problems, well, this really worked for him. And they've, you know, subsequently tried the Botox, but I don't think that they've had the same result that he did where it just is gone.
Well, Linda, thanks for calling. I'm glad your son's doing better. And it sounds not so different from your message, Jeanette, to keep that it's worth it to keep trying, even if so far nothing has worked.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I've heard stories of people who've had headaches for longer than I have, and then they try something new, and then it's gone. You know, it definitely does happen. And they're always doing more research and coming up with new drugs or new treatments. I know I heard something recently where there's some sort of device that uses an electromagnetic pulse or something when you're starting to get a migraine, and that's helped some people. So There are definitely new developments, and I think it's good to keep up with that. You can, you know, if you kind of just Google for headache or just kind of keep alert for that kind of stuff, you'll hear about new things, and you can discuss that with your doctor and see if that's something that might work for you.
Memoirist and blogger Jeanette Fulda is my guest. Her new book is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Author and blogger Jeanette Fulda is my guest. Her new memoir is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. Her blog is at pastaqueen.com. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. Jeanette, on the days when you're really not feeling good, what's the difference between friends who do just the right thing in terms of helping you out and the ones who get on your nerves?
I think it's kind of a matter of, it's sort of a balancing act. You know, you don't want someone to pity you too much or to be too harping on you like a nursemaid. Mm-hmm. But you do want to know that you have their support. So, you know, it's someone being too pushy, you know, that can kind of annoy you. But if they're just kind of there and they let you kind of control how much help you want, I think that helps.
Have you had to learn to be more vocal in talking about your pain? You know, most of the time, if it's not chronic, people don't often talk about how they're feeling physically.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I probably don't talk about it as much as I should because I don't want to just be the girl with a headache.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It particularly when I got the headache, I'd only been at my job for a month. So it was this kind of strange thing that to everyone I was working with, I was the girl with a headache, and I'd never been that girl before. So it does sort of affect your identity.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Veronica in Fort Worth. Hi, Veronica.
Hi. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
I am calling to give some feedback on what it's like to live with undiagnosed chronic pain. I have had chronic pain in my legs for the past 3 years, and at one time I was morbidly obese, and since then I have lost over 100 pounds, but at that time, everything was attributed to you're overweight. So, you know, that's the cause of all of your problems. Since losing the weight, I still have chronic pain in my legs, and like I said, it's been undiagnosed. And I wanted to talk about the shame and embarrassment that goes along with chronic pain. I very much relate to what the speaker said about feeling like an addict, you know, with chocolate or any other sort of pain relief. And that's something that I have really been struggling with lately. And even letting my husband know, you know, hey, I can't function without this pain medication. And I don't know what's wrong with me, and the doctors don't know what's wrong with me. And it's a very embarrassing, shameful experience. And I kind of wanted to see if you have any sort of advice on how to deal with something like that.
Veronica, I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. What do you think, Jeanette?
I think it sort of helps to maybe educate people about what you're going through, and that can be kind of difficult. Like I said, most people, they don't quite grasp what I have as a headache. You know, when you think of a headache, you think of something that goes away. So it sort of helps me sometimes to get more technical and tell them about things like chronic daily headache and new daily persistent headache, which are the official labels for some of these diseases, and maybe talking more in depth about what's going on. It's probably harder for the listener because you don't know what's going on. It's just this undiagnosed thing. I think also, even if sometimes if it does get diagnosed, people don't necessarily believe it's real. People who have like fibromyalgia frequently kind of run up into that. And when that's a disease that gives you kind of widespread pain in your body, but many people don't believe it's real, or something like chronic fatigue syndrome. So I think that's definitely kind of hard. And I don't know if there's anything you can do to make people believe that, you know, unless, you know, as we progress, hopefully more medical research to kind of figure out what's going on and be able to let people know that that's real. As far as shame, I don't know. I think someone can't make you feel embarrassed about something if you don't let them. And I think a lot of maybe the shame you feel maybe once you kind of learn to maybe own your disease or maybe, you know, accept that this is really part of who you are, maybe, you know, with that you can kind of get to a point where you don't feel as ashamed about it and just, you know, accept that, hey, this is part of me. People need to deal with it. And it's not my problem if they can't deal with it.
You know, it is interesting, though, to that point of shame or embarrassment. I mean, in this country where we've convinced ourselves that if you do all the right thing, we almost like to believe that we'll never die if we follow all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that sense sometimes that if people are chronically sick, they must not have tried hard enough to fix their own problem.
Yeah. And I think, again, what she was talking about, like morbid obesity, I know people quite frequently just, you know, assume you were lazy or you didn't work hard enough, whereas I believe that obesity is a very complex condition. And so there are many different factors, and that just like some people are taller than others or something like that. I think some people are just more prone to being overweight than others. But, you know, that's not really necessarily the general belief. So something like when you have a chronic illness like this, I do sometimes people think, you know, maybe she just hasn't tried the right thing and there's a solution out there, but you haven't found it, whereas I kind of think back, you know, to how things were maybe 100 years ago, 200 years ago, where there were just diseases that weren't recognized as real that we now, you know, do categorize as real and see as real things. And I think maybe whatever I have right now is that kind of thing where maybe 100 years from now, people look back and be like, oh, she just had this illness, and if she'd done that, it would have been okay, but they didn't know it at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about somebody finding your book 100 years from now and saying, see, it was written about in 2011.
Yeah, so there's proof that it'll be out there maybe in some old library.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go to Amber in Fairview next. Hi, Amber.
Hi. I just wanted to talk a little bit about, I have a cerebral spinal fluid leak that I've struggled with for about 4 or so years now, and I have kind of become a master of disguising my chronic pain. And I think that actually backfires a little bit for me with the medical community, because I walk in looking like a happy-go-lucky person, and it doesn't seem like there's really much wrong for me. So they just kind of, you know, oh, you know, everything looks normal. I mean, which is now normal for me. You know, have a nice day. We'll see you next time.
Like if you hammed it up a little, they'd pay more attention.
Yes, like mm-hmm. like I need to go in and seem like I'm the in pain person. So I think that's a struggle. If you have a really positive attitude, that definitely helps me pain management wise and also just daily life management. But I think as far as, you know, walking into a doctor's office and seeming completely normal when in reality I'm not, it backfires a little bit.
Yeah,
okay,
you
that's
have
something
a scene
I
like that.
Definitely relate to, because doctors will say, like, how are you doing today? And I'm like, well, wait a minute, am I supposed to say just fine like I would in normal conversation, or should I, you know, say, oh, my headache's pretty bad, or it becomes kind of this strange game where I'm not sure what to say. And I remember also when I went to the doctor, you know, to get antidepressants, I had to kind of remind myself to not act too chipper. Like, they're not going to give me Prozac if I seem all happy, you know. So I did kind of have to make a conscious decision to sort of tone it down a bit.
Do you find that sort of throughout the rest of your life, sort of acting more normal, I'm using air quotes there that you can't see, does that help you feel a little better?
I think it does a bit. I think regardless of whether you have pain or not, if you kind of act like you're happy or act in a certain way, eventually you kind of actually start to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say trying to act as normal as possible does help a little bit, as long as you're not trying to do too much, because that can actually, you know, that can trigger a headache with me. If I'm, you know, working too long in the computer trying to get something done, then I'll get a headache. And sometimes that'll just spill over to the next day where I'll feel really bad and won't be able to do as much if, say, I just kind of pulled back the day before and I would feel better today and be able to do more.
Does it still make you angry that, you know, at age, I guess you're 30 now, that you can't stay out all night partying with your friends or do the things that other people are doing?
I was angry, I think, probably at points during the first year, you know, particularly when I, you know, was having home IV treatments instead of going out, you know, with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now so much part of my life that I kind of accept it as normal. It's just what's normal for me. And I was never, like, a big party person either. I wasn't usually staying up till 4 o'clock at dance clubs or anything. So I wouldn't say it impacted my life, you know, as much as maybe it would have impacted someone else in that way.
We'll go back to the phones now, and this time we'll speak with Tricia in Dallas. Hi, Tricia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to touch a little bit more on the insurance situation. I was diagnosed with a really peculiar bladder disease about 15 years ago in my young 20s, and I have decided over the 15 years that I have gone to any number of doctors for this problem, that filing insurance and submitting claims and getting claims paid and then dealing with the doctors and what I owe them is just as much of an illness as the illness itself. And I kind of thought, well, wouldn't it be neat if there was a middle person that could kind of sort of help with that part, because when I don't feel good, I don't feel like looking at any of that. And I was just kind of wondering if your guest had any experience with that, or if she had any ideas or words of wisdom on that.
Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably also a situation where it's good to have some sort of partner, be it a husband or a wife or your mother or someone who can help you keep track of that stuff. You know, someone who's not in pain and maybe can keep the record straight and look through things. I think I've heard sometimes, you know, if you're like in a car accident or something and have some sort of long-term pain problem, sometimes an insurance company will assign some sort of liaison or someone who, you know, will come with you and help you, you know, figure out everything, just because the insurance company wants to stay on top of it and make sure you know, that everything's being taken care of properly. I don't know if there's someone you can hire to do that or not. I don't know. But it definitely is a lot of work. And I remember, like, the first year I had to just add up all my medical expenses to see if I could get a tax deduction, because I think it was, if more than 7.5% of your annual income was spent on medical bills, you could get a higher deduction. And I did actually qualify for that, which was kind of sad. But I was, at least I got a tax break on that stuff.
I guess, for the rest of your life, when people find out this is part of your life, you will maybe never escape the flood of great suggestions that you have already thought of. But I wonder if you've also heard from a lot of people now that the book is out in particular who say thank you for giving a voice to this thing.
Oh, yeah, I have actually started to get emails like that. And that's really gratifying. And particularly a couple of people who said, this is my story. You've written, exactly what's been going on with me. And I had one person who said, she really appreciated having the language now, like having metaphors or descriptions of what the pain was like that she could help share with her husband so he had a better idea of what she was going through. And it was something she hadn't quite been able to verbalize before. So that's definitely, I think, worth it, all the work that goes into writing a book. And maybe it kind of adds some meaning to the experience that I had that was otherwise meaningless. Having pain for no reason is just very frustrating. It doesn't have any meaning. But now that I've kind of taken that experience and put it out there, I think it's maybe made it a little bit worthwhile.
Are you bothered by people who say that there ought to be some higher purpose to your pain?
I don't know if too many people have said that to me. So, and I don't know. I think everyone has their own opinions on what do and what's the best treatment. And I think different things work for different people, and maybe different people have different opinions about why you have pain or how that pains you, and that's okay. But I also feel like you should respect other people's opinions. So I don't let stuff like that get to me too much.
Was it, Jeanette, a leap of faith to put all this into hard copy form as opposed to just having blogged about it? Did you have to think about what the repercussions would be in your personal life to writing this book?
I did think about it, and also just for future employment. If someone finds out I have a chronic headache, maybe they won't want to hire me. But I feel like I'm a writer.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And you should write about the things you care about, the things you know. And this was just such a huge part of my life for several years that I had to write about it. And if I'm going to write about it, I want people to read it. So I was okay with having it published and putting it out there.
Jeanette Fulda blogs at pastaqueen.com. Her new memoir is called Chocolate and Vicodin, My Quest for Relief from the Headache That Wouldn't Go Away. Jeanette, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
Oh, thanks. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.